Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The parties are engaging us for a possible coalition, and the likelihood would be we will make a coalition or an alliance with other political parties towards these December elections.
ECOWAS announces plans to meet political stakeholders in Gambia beginning Monday ahead of the December presidential election.
Let's have electoral reform that not only guarantee an impartial electoral commissioner with high degree of integrity, because they are appointed separately from the executive, but also they are funded separately, and they don't need to have any fear or favor with any of the groups contesting.
A Ghanaian non-partisan group calls for a new constitution. We'll have details.
He says the claims and counterclaims between the Somali spy agency and the militant group Al-Shabaab and the murder of the officials opens a historic new chapter in the country.
And the Somali terrorist group Al-Shabaab denies claims by the National Intelligence and Security Agency, or NISA, that it killed one of its spies. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Gambia, the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, plans to hold consultative meetings with political parties and other stakeholders beginning Monday. ECOWAS officials say the meetings, which begins from September 6 to 16, will also include training of all stakeholders on the need to prevent and mitigate electoral disputes through dialogue and mediation. This as the West African country prepares to organize a presidential election scheduled for December 4. Local media reports political parties are in talks to form alliances ahead of the elections. Incumbent President Adama Barrow is seeking a second term. Dudu Jah is the executive secretary and deputy secretary of the Gambian Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC. He tells me that his party will fully participate in the meetings with ECOWAS, adding that he remains hopeful that the presidential election will be transparent and credible.
Like you said, they've engaged political parties throughout the country, almost all of them. Expectations are positive. I know Gambians are peace-loving, and all it requires is to sensitize people and tell them the stake that it requires for all of us to come together as unified Gambians, and to know the importance of a peaceful election, pre- and post-election. So I believe this training will help political parties to develop the mentality we will have towards our elections, and also to sensitize our party membership and sympathizers.
There are expectations that the elections will go smoothly. The ECOWAS political arm want to engage all the political parties to try to resolve any possible electoral dispute. Do you anticipate that? And how cooperative will your party be in engaging with the officials of the ECOWAS as they engage all these political parties ahead of the December 4 general election?
Mr. Peter, they've engaged us, I think, several times. This isn't the first. And the track record of the APRC as a party since 2017, when we became an opposition, I think it's very clear. We've respected the laws of the land. And any protocol within the sub-region, we have also observed that there's no track record of us violating any law or rules or regulations in this country. So it's something that we welcome, we definitely embrace, and we'll ensure that peace is the order of the day come these elections in December. And we definitely appreciate the ECOWAS of the efforts of the member states and also the CSOs in this country. They are all working very hard to ensure that these elections will be peaceful.
What are your anticipation about how the elections will be organized during the December 4th elections?
Speedo, we're anticipating that it will be a fair, free and fair elections. That we definitely anticipate. We believe the Independent Electoral Commission have done their best during the registration process, though there is no perfect system. But nonetheless, I believe they could tackle any inefficiencies that have transpired during the registration to make sure that they will well equip their staffs and train them better in handling the elections proper. This is what we're anticipating, and we believe definitely it will be a free and fair elections come December 2021.
How are your party's preparations so far ahead of the elections in December?
Speaker, preparations are on the way. At the moment, other parties are engaging us for a possible coalition, and the likelihood would be we will make a coalition or an alliance with other political parties towards this December elections. And if that materializes, we're very much hopeful and confident that we'll be part of the next government come December.
Well, Dudu, what makes you so confident? Because the incumbent president could actually also garner some political parties to make him difficult to defeat in the upcoming elections. So what makes you so confident that you will form the next government?
Yes, Mr. Peter, the incumbent, we can say they already have a coalition in place. They're working with four other political parties, namely NRP, GPDP, NCP, and PPP. The confidence is all based upon it is at a very advanced stage as far as coalition is concerned, and the likelihood is it will be with the incumbent himself.
Dudu Jah is the Executive Secretary and Deputy Secretary of the Gambian Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC. He spoke with me from the capital, Banjul. National Interest Movement, a Ghanaian non-partisan group, is calling for constitutional reforms that it says will truly represent the hopes and aspirations of the people before the next general election in 2024. Members of the group contend that the current constitution, which came into force in 1992, is undemocratic and appears to only benefit the political elite. The group is now embarking on collecting about 1 million signatures across the country to pressure President Nana Akufo-Addo to review the constitution. Abu Sakara Foster is the leader of the National Interest Movement. He tells me that a new constitution is a must-have, arguing that it is needed as part of the effort to significantly boost Ghana's burgeoning democracy.
These constitutional reforms that we are asking for are both entrenched and non-entrenched clauses that we feel are impediments and roadblocks to our progress both politically, economically, and socially.
Specifically, what are these constitutional reforms or articles in the Constitution that you think Ghanaians want reformed?
We have four key areas. One are the excessive executive powers of the president. The other are the independence of constitutional bodies. The other relate to the entrenchment of the National Development Plan in the Constitution. And yet another area relates to the electoral reforms, and then the decentralization, and finally the building of the kind of society, values in the society we want to see. Now, this is not just a memorandum, a referendum to amend one or two things. That's not what we're calling for. We're calling for a comprehensive constitutional reform that will, in substance, give us a new constitution, if not in name. And all the clusters and groups of articles, there's so many of them, are clearly laid out in the table. What is important is why those key things are required and how they will affect not only the system of governance, et cetera, but the lives of ordinary people. And we cite in particular the first item, which is the excessive powers of the presidency.
Do you have a groundswell of support for this call?
There is a groundswell of support, because when you go and talk to even the members of parliament that are sitting in parliament in private, they all cite incidences of needing this change, that change. They may not be able to say specifically where it is, but they will be able to tell you that this things going this way are not helping. When you go down to issues like ex gratia, which the ordinary person knows, how many people have you not heard saying that it is not fair for a member of parliament to get $500,000 as ex gratia every time his tenure of office ends in parliament, whereas the ordinary person who will work for 30, 40 years goes away with less than 100,000 as a pension?
You have two major parties in Ghana, the ruling New Patriotic Party and the main opposition National Democratic Congress. Both of these parties have changed hands in running the affairs of the country. Now, do you have the tacit support of these two major parties in order to move this goal forward?
Well, it is a myth, indeed, when we think of a duopoly that has come to be established. That duopoly is a consequence of a dysfunctional democracy that offers no space for smaller dissenting groups or independent parties. A dysfunctional democracy that has occupied the political space with monetary inducements, with virtually negative political practices, which border on thuggery, where, you know, violence is visited on people willy-nilly, you know, at the least provocation. So clearly these things are not made up. They've been happening. We know it. And these reforms of themselves will help to reform our democracy by ensuring that the electoral reforms create the opportunity for a coalition government where we don't have a winner-takes-all situation. And if you look at the pattern of electoral voting and look at the results, from 1992, where 11% of the votes cast were for a group that was neither NDC nor MPP, this continued shrinking to a time when now we have about 5, 6, 7 parties contesting in the election that are neither NDC nor MPP, and collectively they cannot even get 1%. Indeed, the spoiled votes are more than the votes they get, which tells you that the product of the democracy we've practiced is to crowd out the space. So we are saying that, look, wait, pull the brakes on this. Let's have electoral reform that not only guarantee an impartial electoral commissioner with high degree of integrity because they are appointed separately from the executive, but also they are funded separately and they don't need to have any fear or favor with any of the groups contesting.
Abu Sakara Foster is the leader of the National Interest Movement. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Authorities in Cameroon say weapons traffickers arrested last week in Nigeria have been arming Cameroon's Anglophone separatists. For VOA, Moki Edward Kezega reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Cameroon's military said Thursday that some of the 40 arms traffickers arrested by police in Nigeria last week are regular suppliers of weapons to rebel groups in Cameroon. The 40 were arrested in the Nigerian border town of Ikom and charged with various crimes, including supplying guns, ammunition, and explosives to separatists. Separatists have been fighting to create an English-speaking state in the western regions of Cameroon, a majority Francophone country, since 2017. Frank Mba, the Nigerian Police Force Public Relations Officer, says some of the weapons intercepted were destined for the separatists.
The suspect in this case, Ntui Lambert, was arrested in Ikom in Cross River State while trying to smuggle or traffic these explosives to Cameroon. He's believed to be working with some secessionist group in Cameroon. This is not his first time supplying them with dynamites and other arms-related items.
In an interview broadcast by Cameroon State Television, Mba said 13 AK-47 rifles, 750 rounds of AK-47 ammunition, and 58 packages of explosives suspected to be dynamite were seized. He says criminal gangs and separatist groups in Cameroon and Nigeria use dynamite to attack government troops. The 40 suspects have been charged with terrorism funding, arms trafficking, cyber crimes, and abductions. 36-year-old suspect Ntui Lambert told local media he is a trafficker. He says his father is Cameroonian and his mother Nigerian.
I was arrested in possession of dynamite explosive and live ammunition of AK-47 with a trial phone. They arrested me alongside three others. The people that arrested me transferred me to Owerri, and from Owerri, I was sent to Abuja.
Lambert did not say whether the weapons were destined for Cameroonian separatist groups. Authorities suspect the arms were meant for the main separatist group, the Ambazonian Defense Forces. ADF Deputy Defense Chief Capo Daniel says the group is not intimidated by the arrests.
If the Nigerian government and the Cameroon government thinks that they are going to stop us from trafficking weapons and affect our ability to liberate and defend our people, this collaboration between Cameroon and Nigeria will fail woefully.
Cameroonian and Nigerian authorities who met in the Nigerian capital Abuja last week agreed to jointly fight armed separatists in both countries. Officials from the two countries said Anglophone separatists in Cameroon and the indigenous people of Biafra, a group that wants a breakaway state in southeast Nigeria, are joining forces to fight for the independence of their respective regions. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Amid the latest wave of COVID-19 infections, less than 1% of people in Africa's most populated country, Nigeria, have been fully vaccinated against the coronavirus. Nigerian authorities are scrambling for more vaccines, but say misinformation and myths are discouraging uptake. For VOA, Timothy Obiezu looks at efforts to dispel the rumors in this report from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
Music and jingles fill the air in a camp for displaced people in the capital, Abuja. The songs are addressing one problem: misinformation about the coronavirus vaccine. Helen Nwoko and her team at Aish Initiative say they are on a mission in the camp to address many who have been misled by a viral social media video that portrayed vaccines as a microchip with magnetic qualities. She says various myths and misinformation about the coronavirus vaccines are negatively affecting uptake.
From the records we get on the people who have been vaccinated in Nigeria, the percentage is too low compared to, what we're supposed to get. Then we said, let's start from this vulnerable group. These are people who are in an enclosed place.
Wonko is the executive director of the nonprofit, an NGO promoting and encouraging vaccine uptake and humanitarian education in Nigeria. The Abuja Camp Vaccine Sensitization Program is a joint effort between the nonprofit, Nigeria's Ministry of Health, and the National Orientation Agency, and it is reaching vulnerable groups in rural areas where authorities say it is most needed. Agnes Bartholomew was at the Abuja Camp Sensitization Program and now says she is ready to take the jab.
So if they bring her, we'll still take her.
Bartholomew was referring to the coronavirus vaccine. She said, if they bring it, I'll take it. But they said they've not brought it. That is what we're waiting for. Fewer than 1% of Nigerians so far have received complete jabs against the coronavirus, an awfully low mark when matched against the 40% authorities were aiming for this year. Officials of the Nigerian CDC say even though the country has not yet acquired sufficient vaccines, vaccine hesitancy is a serious issue. Abiodun Egweno is a program coordinator at an infodemic unit created at Nigeria's CDC to dispel disease misinformation.
We've been noticing that challenges around immunity. People are worried about natural immunity against vaccine immunity. So people are, there are rumors around the fact that natural immunity is better than the vaccination immunity. And then there are also challenges around what the vaccine does when it gets to the body.
Nigeria is seeing a new surge in coronavirus cases and fatalities caused by the deadly Delta variant. The official number of cases stands at 193,000, low compared to many other countries, but the number is rising fast. Authorities say vaccination is the only way to ensure safety and that the country needs to vaccinate 70% of its 200 million people to achieve herd immunity. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The Somali terrorist group Al-Shabaab has denied an accusation by Somalia's National Intelligence and Security Agency, or NISA, that it killed one of their spies. 24-year-old Ikran Tahil Farah was abducted in June. Her parents believe the NISA was responsible. For VOA, Mohamed Kahiye reports from the Somali capital, Mogadishu.
The militant group strongly denied its alleged involvement in the abduction and suspected murder of young intelligence agent Ikran Tahil Farah, who has been missing the past 2 months. In a statement published on pro-Al-Shabaab websites, a spokesman for the group said, it doesn't know anything about the alleged killing of the young officer. The group acknowledged that it does target spy officers and claimed responsibility for those attacks, but said it had nothing to do with this killing. On Thursday, the Somali National Intelligence and Security Agency accused Al-Shabaab of abducting and killing the 24-year-old. Abdisalam Guleid, a former deputy director of the National Intelligence, says the back and forth between the intelligence agency and the militant group is highly unusual. He says the claims and counterclaims between the Somali spy agency and the militant group Al-Shabaab and the murder of the officials opens a historic new chapter in the country, saying it is the first time that Al-Shabaab denied or responded to accusations. He added that the terror group has been trying to build public relations through such case scenarios. However, it is also indignity for the Somali intelligence agency in failing to gain the public trust. The mother of the missing officer, Qali Mahmoud, blamed top government leadership in the country for failure to punish those she said were responsible for her daughter's death. She said that she has been speaking with the media about the absence of her daughter since the first day, saying that neither the office of the president, the prime minister or related institutions bothered. Political leaders, both from the government and the opposition, have appealed to the prime minister to establish a committee of inquiry to investigate the circumstances and bring those responsible to justice. Mohamed Kahiye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
Be sure to join me on the next Straight Talk Africa. We'll take you to the movies as internet streaming giants battle for top billing and online audiences across Africa. We ask who's winning and who's watching. We'll also look at the growing demand for homemade stories by Africans, for Africans, and about Africans. We'll have it all right here on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Mpuga, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from our African collection. But first, Kenya is stepping up its COVID-19 vaccination campaign by setting up inoculation centers in public spaces like malls, markets, and bus stops. Authorities hope the extra convenience will lift a vaccination rate that stands at just 2%. For VOA, Victoria Amunga reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
At a bus terminal in Nairobi, hundreds of people wait to get vaccinated. It's an exercise that has saved them long-distance travel to the designated vaccination centers. Walter Juma, a public bus conductor, is getting ready to receive his first COVID-19 jab. He says because of the demanding nature of his job, he could not find the time to go for vaccination at the health facilities. He says the vaccination is now near my place of work and home. This has helped a lot. There are other people who cannot walk for long, the elderly, and some are sick. Health officials say the number of people turning up for their vaccinations has doubled since more inoculation sites opened a month ago. Jacqueline Kerubu is a sub-county medical officer.
We've decided to come to the community because usually we give Monday to Friday in our public health facilities. But you find most people don't have time to come Monday to Friday. So we decided to come to the community so that we increase accessibility to the vaccine.
Kenya is receiving more vaccines doses from the U.S. government and other nations, so the supply is much better than during the first phase of the vaccination program. With its new vaccination strategy, Kenya's Vaccination Task Force Chairman Dr. Willis Akwale says they are hoping to vaccinate at least 10 million people by the end of the year.
We are now using about 800 centers, and we are going to gradually increase this to 3,000 centers by December. Increasing them means you are reaching people. You are opening vaccination centers closer to where people are.
So far, 2.5 million people have received the first dose of the vaccine in Kenya. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans, and welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. It's been a busy week in African football as the World Cup qualifiers got underway. Cameroon took an early lead in a crunch Group D as they beat Malawi 2-0 at home, and rivals Ivory Coast were held goalless by Mozambique. Hoping to extend the African record 7 World Cup appearances, the Indomitable Lions clash with the Elephants in Abidjan on Monday. Nigeria kicked off the Group C with a comfortable 2-0 win over Liberia. Cape Verde drew 1-1 with the Central African Republic. Also on Friday, Tunisia went top of Group B by beating Equatorial Guinea 3-0. Tunisia joined Zambia, who won 2-1 in Mauritania to top the group. In Zimbabwe, 1996 African champion South Africa were held to a goalless draw in Group G. South Africa played Ghana on Monday in Johannesburg. The Black Stars beat Ethiopia 1-0 in Cape Coast. Algeria thrashed 10-man Djibouti 8-0 on Thursday. The victory puts Algeria top of Group A above Burkina Faso, who beat Niger 2-0. East African rivals Kenya and Uganda drew goalless in Nairobi on Thursday in a Group E match. Mali are early leaders in the group after their 1-0 win over Rwanda on Wednesday. Also on Thursday, DR Congo were held to a 1-1 draw by Tanzania in their Group J in Lubumbashi. In the same group, Benin beat Madagascar 1-0, and in Group H, Namibia drew 1-1 with Congo Brazzaville. In Group I, Morocco beat Sudan 2-0 in Rabat. Earlier on Tuesday, Senegal beat Togo 2-0 in Group H. Senegal traveled to Congo on Tuesday, while Togo was due to play Namibia tonight. Egypt beat Angola 1-0, while Libya won 2-1 against Gabon in Benghazi. Elsewhere, Guinea-Bissau drew 1-1 with Guinea in a game played in Mauritania. Central African Republic drew 1-1 with Cape Verde in Group C. Only the winners of Africa's 10 qualifying groups qualify for the playoffs next March, when the continent's 5 finalists for next year's World Cup will be known. And in athletics, Namibia's Christine Mboma produced a powerful late surge to edge out Sherika Jackson in a star-studded women's 200 meters race at the Brussels Diamond League. Mboma clocked 21.84 seconds, beating Jackson, who came second, and Britain's world champion Dina Asher-Smith, who came third. American Shari Carey Richardson was fourth. Burundi's Francine Niyonsaba won the women's 5,000 meters in 14 minutes, 25.34 seconds. American Fred Kale became the first man to win 100 meters, 200 meters, and 400 meter races in the Diamond League as he claimed a narrow victory in the 100 meters. The final Diamond League meet of the season takes place in Zurich on September 8th and 9th. And that's it for this edition of Netland Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports, Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Following the withdrawal of the United States on time from Afghanistan, a withdrawal that was characterized as being too chaotic, many African researchers and commentators have come out with dire consequences for the African continent as the result of the withdrawal. Most of their prognoses appear to be too far-fetched, mainly because it relies on controversial reporting and commenting emanating from the Western media. Many of those factors that warranted the withdrawal of the United States forces from Afghanistan and that of NATO at the end of August are in no way relevant to the African continent. However, there are other developments relating to Afghanistan that should be seen and analyzed by Africans. Two commentaries ago, we noted that most of the Western media ignored the first opening debate in the Security Council relating to Afghanistan. That open debate resulted in the issuance of a statement, a consensus of the Council members. But that was a statement. Last week, under the able chairmanship of India for the month of August, the Security Council did approve a council resolution that set out the consensus of the international community on what are the requirements in Afghanistan for the attainment of stability. These are that the council members and the world community wish to have an inclusive government in Afghanistan. And they are not, like the media, assuming that the Taliban have already attained legal status in Afghanistan. They may have de facto. Secondly, all of the members agree that Afghanistan should not be made the base for the conduct of terrorist activities. They ask that women and girls retain some of the advantages they have obtained throughout the 20 years of U.S. and NATO occupation. While they called for humanitarian assistance, they appealed to the Taliban leadership to understand the need to obtain international norms in the conduct of the affairs of Afghanistan. Again, surprisingly, This very important resolution of the Security Council was literally ignored by Western media. Even when President Biden, in his closing statements on the withdrawal, mentioned the significance of that resolution. We then have to say why this tendency to look solely on one power to undertake burden of the international community. The Security Council represents the highest organ of the United Nations. While it may be weak in certain aspects, what they did last week represents a stepping stone to see the possibilities of the Security Council. And there are many. If you look at what the Security Council did at a very tense stage in 1973 after the Yom Kippur War, when the United States issued atomic alerts and the then Soviet Union was mobilizing forces to intervene in the Sinai War to rescue the Egyptian Third Army, they agreed that the United Nations should play a major role to calm that crisis. And indeed, the United Nations responded. It quickly formed a peacekeeping force and gave authority to that force to negotiate some complex problems between Egypt and Israel. The negotiations in Committee 101 put together arrangements for the withdrawal of forces across the Sinai and also to provide supplies to the Third Army prior to the withdrawal of forces. They also arranged for the exchange of prisoners of war and the search for dead bodies. It was a very important achievement of the United Nations with the support of the major powers. These are possibilities. The same model used in Sinai could be used in Afghanistan to undertake certain tasks which have been endorsed by the Security Council, that the Taliban should allow all those Afghans who have worked with their NATO forces and be allowed to leave the country, and also to allow those U.S. nationals who may wish now to withdraw from Afghanistan to the United States. These are all the terms which have been emphasized by the global community, including the U.S. and NATO members. But because the Security Council has been dormant for a long time, there's reluctance to use it. This is a task the Africans and those of the non-aligned movement should emphasize again and again. It's important to improve the capacity of the United Nations, not to confine it solely to the delivery of humanitarian assistance. And this should be to the vital interest of all African states. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Skin girl, your skin just like pearls, the best thing in the world.
And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Like pearls, the best thing in the world.
I never charge you for anybody else singing.
She says she really grew up boy like me. Don't believe in nothing but the Almighty. Just a little jeans and a pure white tee. She never dream forever be nobody wifey. Yeah. She wanna be not pretty but your heart is a mess. Play you like a villain cause she caught in a way. Tonight I am walking away. 9 to 5 mine and I grind. Yeah, yeah. Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fights it by falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. You're back against the world. I never tried you for anybody else. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. The best thing in all the world. I never trade you for anybody else.
Pose like a trophy when Naomi's walking. She need an Oscar for that pretty dark skin. Pretty like Lupita when the camera's closing. Trip broke 11 when my Kelly's rolling.
I think tonight she might break her brain. Melanin too dark to throw her shade.
She minds her business and winds her ways.
Go like 24K.
Okay.
Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fighting but falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, got skin just like pearls. You're back against the world. I never tried you for anybody else. A brown skin girl, skin just like pearls, the best thing about the world. I never trade you for anybody else.
Oh, have you looked in the mirror lately? Wish you could trade eyes with me.
Because
there's complexities in complexion, but your skin is glow like diamonds.
Dig me like the earth, you be giving birth to everything alive, baby, know your worth.
I love everything about you, from your nappy curls to every single curve, your body natural.
Same skin that was broken, be the same skin taking over. Most things out of focus view, but when you're in the room, they know.
These are the words of my mother. As I'm getting old, even away I remember. So I'm packing all my tools, I'm going back at home. A young girl like me shouldn't be caught with an old school fool. He told me he was a banker, not knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bankum boxer. Oh sorry I know pa, but I'm bobo down boy. It drew where we are. Can the ganja come? Now it beats me every night and day. Mami Shay, he's the one me, but I didn't wanna know. Mami Shay, Mami Show, Mami Shay, Mami Show, Mami Shay, Mami Show. Shinya cry no day, me. Now picking no day here, mama. Picking no day here, papa. And then kwada yaba, social media nada. But then I a bob, papa. Better na ye nyondo pa. Nesu wakoda na udiye uu kote ni ya usi ya bo. He told me he was a banker, no knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bankum boxer. I'm sorry I no pa, but I'm bobo dambo. E drue we are, shaka ni ganja mpo. Now he de beat me, every night and day. Mami she, he's the one me. Mami show, mami show, mami show, mami show. One day you will know. These are the words of my mother. As I'm getting old, even now I remember. So I'm packing all my tools, I'm going back home. A young girl like me shouldn't be caught with an old school fool. He told me he was a banker, not knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bangum boxer. Now he beats me every night and day. Mama she used to want me, but I didn't wanna know. Mama she, mama show, mama she, mama show, mama she, mama show.
Yani kage wadi di bali sabuye musole di.
Ah tunya daro tunya musole kobe sabuye.
Yani kage fama bali wala musole di.
Ah tunya daro tunya musole kobe sabuye.
Anariko.
Tomel semai mel sawi lilo markasha Semo bi hone be Ye kala tikin ye tik farma musha ye zima ya sabe men sham drasha men sham drasha men sham drasha Ala men awlani
our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor William Eagle, Reporter Douglas Impuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, a tree is known by its fruits. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.